Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, Packers fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm joined once again by the great Carmi Vitale. You can find her on Twitter at Carmi V. Of course, you can find her on Fox Sports as a reporter and covering all things NFL. Carmen, great to have you back. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm doing good. We were just talking about we've got no bye weeks this week, so it's been quite a prep week for your girl.
I can only imagine. You're everywhere at all times talking football, seemingly, you know, at any given moment. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk some NFC North with us. It is week 8 already, which seems absurd. It always flies by so insanely fast. And yet here we are, week 8 and going in, you know, Packers 5-2, the NFC North dominating. And wouldn't you know, of all things randomly that came up through the course of this week, there's maybe some whispers of it initially. And then we saw it in person yesterday. Robert Saleh, former New York Jets head coach, friend of one Matt LaFleur, who just so happens to coach the Green Bay Packers, is at practice two consecutive days, Wednesday and Thursday, taking things in. Matt LaFleur said in his press conference on Wednesday that this is a fluid situation, that he's going to be helping out the offense in some capacity, very similar to what Aubrey Pleasant did a couple of years ago, coming over from Detroit and being sort of an analyst and a consultant on the offensive side of the ball. But nonetheless, Robert Saleh is here to help the Green Bay Packers. Carmen, your thoughts on this potential relationship in Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, it just proves what a sicko Robert Saleh is. Like, my dude, like, you've been through hell and back with the New York Jets. Go on vacation. Go sit on a beach. Do something that's not on a football field. But I saw today on Thursday that he was wearing Green Bay Packers, like a shirt, like the first day he was out of practice. I was like, oh, you know, he's just coming to say hi to his friend. Like, maybe he is like kind of just getting, just observing whatever. He's not, he's in all black. He's not in Packers stuff. Like, he's not joining the staff. He's not going to be an analyst for Green Bay this year, is he? And then on Thursday, he's wearing the green and gold. I mean, a black with the little Green Bay logo, but it's so funny how, like, it's so sometimes predictable in this industry, and because of how incestuous it is, these two are the very best of friends. And that, I mean, if Robert Saleh wanted to still be involved in football, of course he was going to go with his friend Matt LaFleur. It's just hysterical that he even wants to be. I'm like I think he can bring a lot to, and especially when you call him an offensive analyst and having a defensive guy to kind of round out your perspective on this, I think can only help. And it will help Jordan Love tremendously to know what he's looking at and what defenses are seeing when they're trying to attack him. But good God, man, like, just they're all football coaches are sickos. And I say that as complimentary as possible. I don't not like football coaches. Like,
no, I totally get it. I would so argue funny. This is about as close to a vacation as a coach gets in the NFL. He gets to go work with his best friend with a young up and coming team that he doesn't have to do all of the other stuff that taking, you know, being a head coach entails, that he can, like, I know when Jeff Hafley came over to Green Bay, you know, coming from being the head coach at Boston College, he talked about like how amazing it was for him just to sit in his hotel room and watch film. Cause all the stuff with the NIL and the transfer and everything that he had to, you know, have on his plate. He's like, I just got to sit in my hotel room and just watch film, defensive film. Like, I was in heaven. Like, you could just tell, like, and of course, like, these are the way these coaches think. And they're just nerds like all of us, like, wanting to intake as much football as possible. So I'm sure there's a part of Robert Saleh that just gets to go and watch film again and look at the defensive side and offensive side of ball and work next to his best friend. And like, that's probably as close to a vacation as it gets. Not to mention, I think he can legitimately, like you said, help Green Bay. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt. I know that Matt LaFleur is not quite to the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, like, if anyone touches them, like, they immediately get head coaching jobs and it's like turns to gold or whatever. But like, Matt LaFleur, obviously well respected throughout the course of the league, and just to kind of pick his brain and see how Green Bay is doing things right now, it certainly doesn't hurt Robert Saleh either. So I love this, you know, matchup, and I think it could help both sides.
Yeah, I do too. Everything about, you know, being a really good football coach is someone that can adapt to certain situations, adapt with the game, adapt to your personnel, adapt to, you know, different league trends. And then part of that too, I think the best coaches are the ones that have some sort of kind of well-rounded experience, whether they were a defensive GA in college and then, the, you know, now they're an offensive coordinator. Like, all of those things really, really help coaches. And so to be able to do that with your best friend too, it's the best of both worlds. You're right. It is probably the closest that most football coaches, especially if they want to continue coaching, get to a vacation.
We get all of these like NFL reality shows now. Like, we need a buddy cop show with Matt LaFleur and Robert Saleh. Just like,
it's, we just need one of these shows just about coaches. Like, I feel like people need to understand what their lives are like and like what they do on a day in and day out basis and how much it varies across the league too. That's the crazy part. As someone who has been through, has worked for a team during multiple coaching regimes, like, it's so drastically different. And it's so funny, like, what coaches kind of like their philosophies on everything, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. There's no standard job description. That is for sure. I guarantee if anything like that does ever happen, it will not be in Green Bay in all likelihood that something like that takes place. Maybe Dallas, former Green Bay.
Or Los Angeles. I bet you Sean McVay would open up his.
Easily. Yeah. He's probably doing it already knowing Sean, but either way, I do think this is a perfect match. All right. Let me ask you this. I'm going to have you put your Matt LaFleur hat on for a second, and you have access to Robert Saleh, and you want to, like, you can build his job description for the remainder of the year. He's probably going to work remotely for the most part, probably not going to be in Green Bay a ton, but you can build the job description for him. What are you going to put on his plate?
Yeah, I'm going to absolutely, I think, keep him on the offensive side of the ball. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but you clearly have, and plus, like, Matt LaFleur, I don't know how close Jeff Hafley is with Robert Saleh, and you also don't want Jeff Hafley to feel like Robert Saleh is there to step on his toes.
Yep.
So I think you keep him on the offensive side of the ball and you just have him kind of review these games and you look at kind of the miscues or the mental errors or anything like that. And you say, all right, oh, this defense was really effective at doing this. Why was it so effective? And kind of using him to self-scout yourselves on offense to see where you can kind of shore up your deficiencies or your weaknesses. Like, basically, like what Matt LaFleur kind of alluded to his job already being. I think, like, you send the tape to Saleh right away, and, you know, he gets on a call with Jordan Love every week, and you kind of say, all right, this is what you did here. Look, this is where you should have looked your safety off, or this is why you telegraphed this play. Like, just all about self-scouting on the offense from a defensive perspective.
No, I love that. And here's the interesting thing. So Saleh and Hafley actually worked together. Saleh was defensive coordinator in San Francisco. Hafley for 2 years there was the defensive back coach during that time. So they have that relationship. I'm with you though. I think you want to, and Matt did this in his first press conference. I've been talking about this, like, basically set this clear boundary of like, Jeff's doing his thing. Like, we're giving him full autonomy. There is no like Jeff having to look over his shoulder, you know, Robert Saleh is going to work on the offensive side. Like, you could tell, because again, that's the last thing you want Jeff to do, is especially as he's starting to kind of get into his own and coming off a great, you know, really defensive win against this Houston Texans team. I don't think you want that. But I will say this, if I'm Jeff Hafley and I've had that working relationship in the past and that is there, and like we've got access to Robert Saleh, I'm kind of being like, hey, do you mind if I kind of pick his brain a couple of times as well? And I'm sure that that relationship is there and that opportunity is there also. So while I think it's important that that sort of separation of church and state takes place and Jeff has the full autonomy to do what he wants to do, I am sure there's going to be opportunities for Jeff to be able to call up Robert too and say, hey, I was thinking about this. What do you think about this? And just even having that second set of eyes on stuff could be massively valuable as well. So I just think it can work in so many different ways.
Especially with Robert Saleh being so, so good with defensive lines and defensive fronts and how to get pressure and stuff like that. Like, that is what he is good at. That's what his defenses are built on. And that's something where we saw it looked better this last game against the Texans, but that's something where the Packers have been trying to improve a little bit is along the defensive line.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how this relationship works out. And again, maybe it just ends up being a week or two thing and mostly much ado about nothing. But I think anytime you can get a former head coach, a recent, very recent head coach in and just get a second pair of eyes on some stuff, I think it is only going to enhance your team. So love this for Green Bay and love it for Robert Saleh as well. So he can kind of maybe pick up some ideas and just kind of stay fresh as he gets ready for his next opportunity. All right, let's talk about some maybe what I would consider fantasy football brain rot, Carmen Vitale. There was an article in ESPN that it had nothing to do with fantasy football, to be fair, but it was basically talking about the veteran running backs and how they are doing so far in the league. And it listed, obviously, guys like Joe Mixon and Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley and, of course, Green Bay's Josh Jacobs. And one of the things it said is that Josh Jacobs has been below average. And it kind of went on to say, and this was a Bill Barnwell article in ESPN, the comparison here was to Mixon, Barkley, and Henry, and sort of saying some of the things that Jacobs was maybe doing a little bit worse, not breaking off a ton of the explosives. He has four runs that are 20 plus, doesn't have anything over 38. But I feel like this is such an interesting take, because I think from Green Bay side of things, I think Jacobs is fourth in the NFL in rushing. You know, he's doing a great job of, you know, kind of managing the ability to pick up yards where there isn't always a ton there. He is getting those four explosive runs over 20 plus yards. Like, I think this is kind of what Green Bay expected him to be when they signed him to this deal. So I want your viewpoint from a national side of things, looking at Josh Jacobs, obviously totally unbiased here. How do you view Josh Jacobs so far in Green Bay? Has this been successful? What you kind of expected? Less than so? Where do you come out on it? Hey, everybody. It's week 8. Week 8. Slow down season. You're going way, way, way too fast. But there's still plenty of NFL season left, which means there's still plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. Of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. This week, I'm going with kickers. You heard me right. I am going with kickers. Justin Tucker, he is going to kick a ton of field goals against the Browns. Younghoe Koo is going to kick a bunch against the Bucks, and Brandon McManus is going to do well in his return to Jacksonville. So it is kicker week for me on Prize Picks. As always, there are plenty of options for you to choose from. But remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game.
Yeah, personally, this is kind of what I expect. I mean, he does have the third most rushing attempts, so I think he's really there to make sure that this Green Bay offense does stay balanced. Yes. But it's also not where Green Bay wants or needs its production. The production, it comes in the passing game still, because you paid Jordan Love all that money and you have all of these incredible weapons that just present this plethora of options that makes this Green Bay offense so dangerous. Josh Jacobs is not the reason that the Green Bay offense is dangerous, nor was he brought there to be the reason that they were dangerous, where that is completely untrue when it comes to Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley. Like, those guys are there to make that offense what it is and to make that offense they're the focal points. Josh Jacobs isn't the focal point of this offense. So the fact that you are still getting the third most rushes out of him, I don't think it's up to him to come up with the explosive plays. The explosive plays come through the pass. The explosive plays come through the way that Jordan Love can deal the ball to all of the offensive options that he has. And so I just think that he's doing everything you want him to do for this offense, which is make it well-rounded and keep defenses guessing. You need to keep them honest when it comes to the run, because they do know that Jordan Love is going to try to throw the ball, and they are going to try to maybe crowd the backfield, and you play a lot of nickel against this. At least that's kind of what what you want to do initially against the Green Bay Packers, or what you think to do initially against them, is to drop a lot of guys in coverage because of all the options. Well, having Josh Jacobs run the ball as much as he does, you can't necessarily do that. You can't just keep giving him light boxes, and teams haven't, because they do respect Josh Jacobs as a runner. So it keeps defenses off balance when you're talking about this Green Bay offense, which, again, that is its strength, is that Matt LaFleur can go so many different ways with this offensive game plan week in and week out. And you know Jordan Love is comfortable with all of his weapons, so he can deal all across the field. I don't think that we should be talking about Josh Jacobs in the same sentences as Saquon and Derrick Henry, given the fact that he is not the focal point of this offense where the other two are.
I could not agree more. I think he's been everything Green Bay has wanted him to be so far. I do think there's ways to get this running game going a little bit more. And I think we're going to see more explosives from Josh Jacobs as the year goes along. He's a momentum-based runner. He's going to continue to get options. It's going to get colder. They're going to run the football more in December and January. Like, I think there are going to be opportunities for Josh Jacobs to get even better as this goes along. And yet again, two games where Jordan Love wasn't even in at quarterback and he was, you know, heavily targeted and guys were extra in the box and things like that. So I think everything is exactly where you want it to be. And I think it can even get better with Jacobs. And I think the other thing too is I'm already starting to see the conversations of like, well, Christian Watson's not getting targeted enough. And, you know, Dontavian Wicks isn't quite having the season that maybe some people expect. This is going to be the case in Green Bay while they have all of these weapons. There is not going to be a superstar. There is not going to be somebody that gets consistent, massive yardage every single week because there are a ton of mouths to feed in this offense. And for me, like, If nobody is having that 1A ultra season, that's a good thing because that means they're continuing to spread the ball around and there are going to be Christian Watson breakout games coming. Dontavian Wicks had a really nice game last week. Dobbs has been on one the last 2 weeks. The first month of the season was all Jaden Reed. There are going to be ebbs and flows throughout the course of this season when it comes to production. And I don't need any one player getting the lion's share. I want this to continue to stay spread out.
Yes. That's, again, that is what is so dangerous about the Green Bay Packers. And that's what I keep talking about too, is that you just never know where Jordan Love is going to go with the ball. And that doesn't mean great things for fantasy people. That doesn't mean great things if you are a receiver that wants the lion's share of targets, because that's just quite frankly not what's going to happen in this offense. And Green Bay as a whole is better for it.
Totally agree and could not agree more. And think that's going to continue to be the case in Green Bay. We talked about some trades last week, Carmen. We had another, I think, couple of trades this week. A couple Titans traded away, specifically DeAndre Hopkins to the Kansas City Chiefs. I've been getting this question a lot and I don't have a perfect answer to it. So that's why I bring you on, so that you can have all the perfect answers to things. So if I told you in a couple of weeks or within these next couple of weeks that Green Bay made I don't even want to say significant, but a noteworthy addition at the trade deadline. What position would you tell me that they made that noteworthy addition at? Because I'm intrigued at where Green Bay could potentially add on this team, where there's not a ton of holes, but of course, there's always ways that you can get incrementally better. And we know Brian Gutekunst would be open to doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would. It'd probably have to be to shore up the trenches. Like I like the offensive line, they've clearly figured out the best five to be out there, but you do have to insulate against injury. I think when you're talking about Green Bay, like you said, there's not a whole lot of holes. So you're just kind of looking for insurance policies or and depth. And I think that comes along with the defensive line too. You know, you've had injuries along there. You've had injuries in the linebacking core. So like that front seven, but I don't think there's a need to go out and get someone like flashy or expensive or whatever. I think at this point, especially with the way that the team looks like it's starting to gel now that Jordan Love has been back in the lineup for a few weeks, on both sides of the ball, though, and this last game against the Texans was so huge for the Green Bay Packers defense. And you saw that they are capable of at least disrupting the quarterback, even if it's not necessarily getting sacks or pressure, although they did those things. I think Wes at Packers.com had a really great article just about what they did defensively up front in particular and how they used their guy. They even used Rashawn Gary as like a decoy because they were simulating pressures up front. And that was enough to get CJ Stroud off of his game. And I think he was blitzed only what I think Wes said 17% of the time on things that he was pressured on plays where he was pressured. So you are starting to see that kind of come along and Jeff Hafley's scheme take hold up front, which was the big question mark, because you see what things are doing, what things are happening in the backfield, and you see the ball hawking ability of guys like Xavier McKinney, although Xavier McKinney had a sack in this last game. You're getting creative and everything is starting to click. So I just don't think that you mess with that. But I do always think that there's flyers to be taken on depth pieces because injuries are a certainty in this game. And it's just, where are you thinnest? So I think, you know, you look at even the secondary or even to that linebacking core, or you look along the offensive line, but you're deep at receiver. Even with Luke Musgrave out, Tucker Kraft is doing wonderful things at tight end. You've got Josh Jacobs as, again, not a focal point, but a huge part of this offense. So I don't know. I just don't think that you go out there and make a splash if you're Green Bay.
I think you hit on, I think it would take an injury over these next couple of weeks that would open up a hole that they don't have right now. And if that, right. if something like that happens, and, you know, knock on wood, it doesn't, and we don't have to worry about this, but if there was a significant injury, you know, to a player that was super important to this team, I think Goody would go out and look to potentially replace that. But other than that, it does feel a little bit more like, all right, is there, again, a small piece that we can use to help, maybe something that gives us just a little bit something different. You know, corner's interesting to me because Jair is kind of the guy. Keyshawn, they've moved outside and he's done well there. Yes. Javon Buller, they're trying to get more snaps in the slot and they really don't seem to want to take Keyshawn off the field. Like, I think Stokes and Valentine have been a little bit underwhelming for what they were hoping for. So, like, again, you can probably find ways to slightly upgrade, but I don't know that you're going ultra aggressive to go and do something like that when you do have the pieces and the depth that you need at some right. of those positions. So I don't expect Green Bay to make any sort of flashy moves, but if they do, I will be interested. I will say this, every other year, it seems like there is a significant need and they never make that move. So now when there's not, maybe they will go make that move.
Go make that move.
It's of course, everything's always a little bit upside down. It always seems like, but I digress. We shall see what happens in the next couple of weeks. All right, let's talk about, as we kind of transition into our NFC North review and preview for this week. I know you were taking a close look at Jared Goff and his potential MVP candidacy, which I am 1,000,000% on board. Like, he is that good and he deserves to be in that conversation. The top seven, I think it is here. Yep. Quick math is here are the top seven in MVP odds right now. Lamar Jackson, of course, number one, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jared Goff, CJ Stroud, Jordan Love, and Sam Darnold in that order. Of those seven, three of them, of course, in the NFC North in Goff, Love, and Darnold. Goff is at plus 700. Love is at plus 1400 and Darnold is at plus 1600. So first of all, I want to hear your take on Jared Goff. But secondly, if you had to invest a crap ton of money, Carmen, on either Jared Goff plus 700, Love plus 1400 or Darnold plus 1600, what direction are you going in?
I mean, of those guys, I think that Jared Goff has the best chance. I know that those aren't the best odds. So if you really wanted to be a hipster about it, I guess, honestly, Sam Darnold? No, I'd still go Jordan, because if you look at what Jordan was able to do in the back half of last season, I still think that, like, he hasn't reached his ceiling when it comes to what he's capable of in this Green Bay offense. And I think he's only going to continue to ascend as the season goes on, and he could become pretty undeniable by the end of it. Yep. But that being said, I mean, Jared Goff is just on an incredible tear, and it's to me, it's between him and Lamar Jackson. It's going to be really insane if Lamar Jackson plays better than he did last year, his MVP year, and then doesn't end up with MVP this year. Because you look at these this last week's slate of games and you see the performance that Jared Goff put on, where he's completing 15 straight passes against a Brian Flores defense. He's the only one that's been able to figure them out. Between him and Ben Johnson. And then you were like, oh, there's no one that could possibly, you know, he has to be the front runner for MVP. There's just no one that's playing like him. And then Lamar Jackson goes out on Monday night and just says, hold my beer. Yeah. Like, that's what Lamar Jackson did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, much to my own chagrin. But he is also being put in so many incredible situations. Lamar is with Derrick Henry. But what we're not talking about enough, though, is that Lamar Jackson is second in EPA per dropback. And he is second in overall EPA passing. So this is a guy that is passing the ball better than he ever has in his career. And he's also a factor in the run game. There's just no one that's doing what Lamar Jackson is doing. But when you look at what Jared Goff has been able to do with just the accuracy, it's not as if, though, that, you know, he's got, especially over the last 4 weeks, Jared Goff leads the league in completion percentage. But he also leads the league in yards per target or yards per attempt. And that's insane when you think about it, because not only is he completing passes at a crazy rate, but he's pushing the ball down the field. So often when you see these guys with really high completion percentages, it's because they're kind of dumping things off. They're taking their checkdowns. It's all of those short and kind of quick game throws. And that's not the case with Jared Goff. He is the beneficiary of a lot of yards after the catch, but I do think that that is more to do with Jared Goff's decision-making and just the play designs from Ben Johnson being able to kind of isolate some of these receivers than it is just that receivers are getting those tough yards after the catch. I mean, Jared Goff is able to hit these guys in stride, no one more so than a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, and they are able to go yards and yards and yards before a defender is able to even contact them. So this is it's just an incredible run. And when you look at what Jared Goff was able to do against this Minnesota defense, for those of you that don't know the way that communication works between an offensive coordinator and a quarterback in game, most people know the quarterbacks have the headsets. You have your offensive coordinator talking to you. Those headsets cut off 15 seconds before the play starts. So you are not able to communicate, and your offensive coordinator is not able to communicate to you on the field within the last 15 seconds before the play clock runs out. So if you look at what Jared Goff then did, there are so many times where right up until when he snaps the ball, he is making changes on the line. There are things built in for him as far as protections go and everything against a Brian Flores defense that can go cover zero on you. Yeah. But it's up to Jared Goff to then say, okay, I need you, I don't need you. And then releasing some of these guys like tight ends, running backs that are involved in the protection scheme into their routes. That is what Jared Goff is doing in real time. And I don't know if him and Ben Johnson figured out tells from this Vikings defense to figure out who was actually coming and where they're coming from, because that's the biggest question mark when it comes to Brian Flores' defenses. But he seemed to know. And I mean, there's things like the 30-yard completion to Sam Laporta over the middle. You go and you see that he puts his hands on his helmet like this, and all the guys are echoing it. So he's changing the play, and you think, oh, Minnesota has seven guys on the line of scrimmage. He's making sure that Sam stays in to protect. No, Sam then releases into a route, and sure enough, only four guys come, or maybe it was five, but whatever it wasn't all seven. It was not a cover zero look from Brian Flores. And it's like, how did Jared know that? How did he know that? Like, the processing ability, which is not something we've historically associated with Jared Goff, is just leaps and bounds what it was when he was with the Rams. Now with the Lions, he just seems to know exactly what he's looking at, and he's making really good decisions, and he's taking care of the football. I cannot say enough about Jared Goff. There's my soliloquy. I know I went on for like 5 minutes just there, but good God. He's really, really impressed, I think, everybody this season, including myself.
I'm glad he's getting his flowers. I know people are already going to be mad at me as I'm saying this right now, like in Lions colors for some reason, didn't even recognize it coming into this, but I know, right? Yeah, it's all right. Either way, I do think he's having a phenomenal season. He deserves to be in that conversation completely. And, you know, what I will say too, like, I don't know if this is going to be hot takey or not, but like, if somehow the Lions end up winning a Super Bowl, and again, not cheering for that by any means, despite the colors choice for me today, that may go down as one of the greatest trades of all time for both teams. Like, we always talk about from a trade standpoint of like, oh, this one team ripped off the other team completely. Right. And like, you can absolutely win a trade that way. But, you know, there are opportunities too, where both teams actually come out better for it. Like, those are the best trades that you can possibly have where both teams actually win. And if the Rams get their Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, which they did, of course, and, you know, all of a sudden the Lions get to sort of rebuild and get Jared Goff out of it, and now Goff would go on to win the Super Bowl. And even if not, like, this is already one of the most, you know, impressive trades that it really worked out phenomenally for both sides. But they're one Super Bowl away in Detroit from being like, this legitimately propelled both of these teams to championships. And you just don't see trades like that in any sport very often, if ever.
Yes. Agreed. It's one of the very, very rare scenarios where it worked out for both teams, especially on like pretty much a player swap. So like that was the other thing too. It's not like you got a whole lot more in addition to Jared Goff that like propelled your team forward. It was really Jared Goff and just the way that Ben Johnson has taken to Jared Goff and Jared Goff has taken to Ben Johnson. Like, they just seem to have a really good working relationship, and Ben Johnson is designing things for Jared Goff and according to his skill set, that's really paying off. And it has Jared Goff playing with more confidence than we've ever seen him play with before.
All right. So we just kind of touched base on Vikings Lions. We've been obviously talking Packers Texans here all week, and then the Bears had a bye week. So we'll bury week 7 and we'll look ahead now to week 8. We can't talk, unfortunately, Vikings Rams because we are recording this on Thursday. It is airing on Friday. So we can pretend we can like record two things right now and say, oh my goodness, yeah, we knew the Vikings were going to win, or we knew the Rams were going to win. I can edit it out, but no, I digress. We can't really cover that one, but we'll both be, I'm sure, watching tonight and seeing if Minnesota can take care of business against those LA Rams that we were just talking about with Matthew Stafford. But we've got 3 other games. And by the way, all 4 NFC North teams are favored again, which would be insane if all 4 won again. But we've got Lions Titans, where Lions are, of course, ridiculous favorites in that game, understandably so. Bears Commanders, where the Jaden Daniels situation is certainly in flux and up in the air. The Bears are currently favored in that game. And then Packers in Jacksonville, where that line continues to shrink. It's at 3.5 right now. So your thoughts on the NFC North matchups this week?
I think it was Kevin Fishbane who writes for The Athletic in Chicago that said that the last time that the Washington Commanders and Bears and Chicago Bears were both over 500 and played each other was 1991. Whew. So this is just, which
doesn't
each
happen.
Each organization has fault in that one. But it's going to be very interesting. Jaden Daniels isn't practicing this week. We're going to see if he's able to go. I wish that we want to see this, but I also don't want it to come at the cost of Jaden Daniels maybe re-injuring his ribs or anything like that. I do think that the Bears being road favorites is also something of a rarity, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they stack up against a defense that I'm not totally sold on in Washington, but Washington does have Caleb Williams, offensive coordinator from college, as their offensive coordinator. And yeah, if you don't think that Cliff Kingsbury is in Dan Quinn's ear this entire week, I've got something else coming to you.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting to see. Cliff Kingsbury knows Caleb Williams' strengths. He knows how talented he is. He spoke very highly of him this week, but he also knows where his deficiencies lie and how to get to him. So can Dan Quinn capitalize on that with the talent from this Washington defense, which has surpassed my expectations? I'm just not totally sold on it yet. And can this Bears offense and the offensive line kind of keep up their improvement? They seem to have been doing a lot better over the last couple of weeks, but it hasn't come against super stiff competition. So can Caleb Williams still be effective? Does DJ Moore go off for 230 yards again? I don't know. But this Bears defense is going to be super stingy. And so if the Commanders do not have Jaden Daniels under center, I know it didn't seem in game to matter as much. Marcus Mariota was still effective in this Washington offense, but this Bears team is different than the level of competition that they were going against last week. So are they going to be able to get the turnovers or the takeaways from Marcus Mariota? Are they going to be able to pressure him? And I would bet that they will be able to. So that's going to be a really interesting game, regardless if Jaden Daniels plays. It'll just be cool regardless that Caleb Williams is going back home. But especially if Jaden Daniels plays, though, then that's really going to earn its time slot that it got flexed to.
Yeah, it would even be better. Just really quick, it was the 5-0 Washington football team versus the 4-1 Chicago Bears at the time.
In 1991.
Yes, 1991 is when this happened. Mark Rippon was at quarterback for Washington, 18 of 31, 168, two touchdowns and a pick. It was Jim Harbaugh at quarterback for the Chicago Bears, 17 of 41, 206 yards, no touchdowns, three interceptions.
Oh.
You had Chip Lowmiller start things off with a field goal, Mark Rippon to Art Monk, Neil Anderson with a one-yard run for Chicago to make it 10-7, then Rippon hit Monk again, and Chip Lowmiller finished it off with a field goal for a 20-7 Washington football team win over the Chicago Bears back in 1991. So that goes in the way back machine, but yeah, it was that long ago, which is crazy.
I was going to say, I'm sure people, I just heard names that I haven't heard in a very, very long time.
Well, I mean, we've had Brett Rippon, you know, Maury obviously like play like for these, you know, for what was it, the Rams last year, I think.
Yep. He was on the Bears. On the Bears?
Right. Yeah, he might still either. I know he was or had a cup of coffee there or something at some point. But yeah, so he's right now in the Minnesota Vikings. So he's still in the NFC North, still kicking around. So, but either way, yeah. So Mark Rippon's son and, of course, Jim Harbaugh, now coach of the LA Chargers, no longer in San Diego. So yeah, small, small world. But anyway, let's go to, what do we got next? Lions Titans. What are you looking for in that one?
Yeah, Lions Titans, I'm very interested to see because the Tennessee defense has not been great when it comes to the pass rush and what they've been able to, the push they've been able to get up front. But they've been pretty decent against the run. And that's something that I think that the Lions are going to lean on a little bit with not having their deep threat in Jameson Williams out for the next couple of games. You're going to need to kind of make your offense still as dynamic as possible. And that comes with Sonic and Knuckles, which is Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And what you can do against this Tennessee defense that is really pretty stout against the run. So I think that's going to be a huge matchup in that game. But then, yeah, what Jared Goff can do behind arguably the best offensive line in football without being really pressured. We know how good Jared Goff is when he's not under pressure and when he can kind of deal. So I'm looking to see, you know, if Sam Laporta has a big game. Obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown, when you don't have that kind of take the top off deep threat in Jameson Williams, who has, I mean, it's been kind of feast or famine for him. That's the nature of what the Lions just want to do with him. He's a gadget player. He's just the guy that's going to stretch the field and add that element to your offense, but he's not going to be a high volume guy by any stretch of the imagination. And then defensively, you got to see if the Lions end up having a hangover from, you know, obviously they're juiced up to go against a division opponent. How do they do against an opponent that's been struggling? And, you know, maybe they're not taking it seriously. I don't really know. And you don't have Aiden Hutchinson up front. So how much is that really going to matter? And is there going to be somewhat of a hangover from playing the Vikings this game? That's what I'm looking for there mostly. But I mean, the Lions should run away with this. And if they don't, I mean, who knows? The NFL is just funny like that, but
it would be one of the more stunning outcomes of the entire season if Tennessee beat Detroit in Detroit. And I know crazy things happen and you never quite know, but this would be a massive upset if something like that happened. I like Detroit to kind of roll in this one. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, of course, Packers, Jaguars on Sunday. That, like I said, that line continues to shrink a little bit, go a little bit towards Jacksonville's way. What are you looking for in this one?
Yeah, I mean, the guy that has really been able to take the top off for this Jacksonville offense has been Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah. BTJ has had really a lot of success on throws of 20 or more yards or catches of 20 or more yards. That's kind of the danger with him. And so how do you keep a lid on that? Is it putting a guy like Jair on him? Or do you kind of rely on some of that safety help, the two high safeties and stuff, to kind of take the cap off of what he can do and how much he can hurt you? I do think that, you know, Tank Bigsby had a really good game this last game for Jacksonville. So how do you kind of stop the run and basically not let Jacksonville even start, given that that can make them pretty one-dimensional? I think it's going to be crucial that Green Bay gets out to a lead and then forces Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence to play from behind, because we haven't seen them be able to climb out of those holes when they do get down. So that's the biggest thing with them. But again, I don't really know why the line is moving at all. I think Green Bay is by far and away the better team, and this kind of matchup. I mean, I know the Jags are kind of on life support right now, and they got the win in London finally. But I don't have any trust in them to be a cohesive team, and I just think that the Packers, by contrast, are one of the more complete teams in the league, certainly in their conference. So I think that this is going to be the Packers game to lose.
I think so too. I feel confident Green Bay gets the win. I will say sometimes they have the propensity to maybe win a little bit ugly. So maybe they only win by a field goal, which I don't care about. Like, if they get out of Jacksonville winning by a field goal and what's a little bit of a trap game, trap between Houston and then Detroit next week, like, so be it. They'll be fine. I'm not concerned about that. But it would be massively disappointing if they did not come out with a win in some capacity, right? If somehow Jacksonville pulled the upset and, you know, just coming off a win against Houston and then you give it right back against Jacksonville, that would be massively disappointing. So win by three, win ugly if you need to. I don't really care about the style points. They've got a big game coming up with Detroit, and they can't look to it. They got to look at this one first and make sure to get the victory there, and then they get that Detroit game and then a bye after that. But either way, we could be looking at another 4-0 week for the NFC North. Again, maybe you're listening to this in the future and the Vikings have already lost. That'd be great if that happened. But as of right now, as we're recording this, the NFC North could go undefeated.
I guess I have the purple lights behind me that could be taken as Viking.
People are gonna be all over in the comments. We'll be all right. We talk Packers 365 days a year. We have enough good positive points in the bank to make up for it. Carmen, you're the absolute best. There. Oh, look at this. Yes, we're all set. Now the Packers are winning for sure. Carmen, you're the best. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
Just go to CarmiV on Twitter, on Instagram. That's where all of my stuff is posted between all the things that I'm doing between the PFF show. I do have a Bears, if you want to keep up with the Bears at all, I have a Bears show on Marquee Sports on Tuesdays. I do this and then everything on Fox Sports and the Fox Sports NFL on Fox podcast as well. That comes out on Tuesdays, I believe.
Make sure to check all those out. Hey, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. I love a lot listening to Bears podcasts and stuff like that, just to see what's going on in Bears land, Vikings land, Lions land. So if you're going to listen to one, make sure to listen to Carmen's. You're the absolute best, Carmen. You can find her again on Twitter at Carmi V. You can find the podcast here at Packaday Podcast. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for Carmen and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.